This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
Welcome to the show. This is Jason Hartman, your host, and every 10th episode, we do something kind of special, kind of different. What we do is we go off topic. So regardless of which show it is on the Hartman Media Network, whether it be one of the financial shows, economics, real estate investing, travel, longevity, all of the other topics that we have, every 10th episode, we go off topic and we explore something of general interest, something of general life success value. And so many of our listeners around the world in 164 countries have absolutely loved our 10th episode shows. So that's what we're going to do today. And let's go ahead and get to our guest with a special 10th episode show. And of course, on the next episode, we'll be back to our regular programming. Here we go. It's my pleasure to welcome Robert Sutton to the show. He is a Stanford professor of organizational behavior, management science, and engineering. He's author of the new book, The Asshole Survival Guide, How to Deal with People Who Treat You Like Dirt. And I actually read one of his other books, The No Asshole Rule, about 10 years ago. Robert, it's great to have you. Welcome.
It's great to talk to you, Jason.
Good to have you here. So you've been writing about these assholes for about 10 years, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I did write a couple of books in between, but I seem to be back to it. The 2007 book, The No Asshole Rule, I innocently thought I was writing a book about organizational culture, because leadership and culture is the main focus of my work and always has been. But the response was, I was just deluged with emails, personal stories. People would just come up to me, and essentially, they, in different ways, they'd say the same thing, which was, I'm dealing with an asshole or a bunch of them. What do I do? And I mean, everything from CEOs complaining about board holes to Costco workers complaining about their tormentor boss.
So
I eventually thought, time to write something.
What is it about people? Like, why, you know, it seems like a bad business plan. Look, if you want to get ahead in life, right, be a decent human being, be nice to people. Just don't get it. Like, there is this one man, just my nemesis, and I really honestly have no idea why. This guy would harass me, stalk me. He was a magazine publisher. He threatened to write negative articles about me. I mean, the guy, I swear to God, if he had the weapons and the ability, he would be a new genocidal maniac. I think he'd be Chairman Mao, Hitler, Stalin, whatever. You know, I mean, he was just an evil human being. And I don't know why. What did I ever do to this guy? I just don't know. I don't get it.
The question of why is deep and mysterious. Sometimes it has to do with the upbringing that people have, that maybe they had traumatic early childhood and so on. The other thing, which is, you know, always a warning for anybody who gets in an executive position, is that power does not necessarily bring out the most attractive things in people. It tends to make people more selfish, less focused on the needs of others, to view others as objects to just accomplish things. And
there's an old saying about that, right? Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, as the saying goes. And we certainly see this in government.
It doesn't happen to everybody, though. And that's one of the things that for executives, and it's an interesting time because we're seeing evidence with Uber and other executives. Martin Chekel, who is like the nuts, the pharmaceutical guy, that treating people like dirt doesn't always seem to work. It might be a good short-term strategy to win. But when you're treated like that person treated you, the classic thing that happens to people who are jerks is that their enemies kind of lie in wait and nobody's really willing to do them a favor.
Right.
In addition to the fact, one of the main things that, and you put your finger on it, the other thing that's happened in the last decade since I finished the first book is that there's perhaps 200,000 more peer-reviewed studies. And although they're all different, the message is the same. If you treat people like dirt, it's bad for their physical and mental health. Bad for their productivity, and they're going to leave at the first opportunity. It's not good capitalism.
So do you mainly focus on the workplace? I mean, in the first book you did, I know that, but I'm not sure in this book, is it really workplace oriented?
That's mostly what I focus on. I'm an organizational psychologist. the way that I've sort of expanded it a little bit more in this book, well, first of all, this book especially focuses on, rather than building a jerk-free workplace, is if you've got a jerk in your life in the workplace, how you deal with it. That's the focus. The other thing that has really evolved from looking at the research in particular is, for many of us, when we treat other people badly, we are unaware of it. And so this idea of how important self-awareness is something that keeps coming up more and more. And then the other thing that I emphasize is, although there are some people like your nemesis, who just sounds like a classic, what I would call certified...
Andrew, yeah. He's something.
absolutely classic. But any of us, under the wrong situation, when we're tired, when we're in a hurry, when we're feeling powerful, and especially when we're around other jerks, it's very contagious. It can happen.
Yeah. You know, we all get grumpy and we all get arrogant from time to time. With some people, it seems to be like just their core being, and that's what's so scary. I mean, everybody can be that way situationally, you know, certainly, you know, we've all been rude to people, but to do it as part of your like core being is just really, really disgusting. I've got to ask you a question though. I know you focus on the workplace, but Robert, you know, we've all heard the saying from frustrated men, and you probably know where I'm going with this. You mentioned jerks. You know, women like jerks. Women like jerks, right? Every single guy says that, you know, that they love bad boys, they love assholes, they love jerks. What about this?
I don't understand it, but I think that we've all seen it. They certainly make lousy long-term partners, but are probably entertaining in the short term. So that's all I can say.
Yeah.
But I'm not an expert. I'm not a dating expert, but, you know, having seen such dismaying behavior in my life. But, you know, not all women, though. I think that there's plenty of smart women.
I have a comment for you on that, but maybe give you a little fodder for it, and then we'll go back to the workplace. But, you know, if the evolutionary psychology is accurate, which I think it is generally, but the political correct people might argue with this, is that, you know, women generally, even now, even in the modern era, because of, you know, old psychology, look for men to be providers, right? And if you're looking for a male to fight for you and to stand up for you and your family and your offspring and protect you, you know, that guy's got to be a jerk sometimes, right? He's got to fight for your unit, right?
I think there's a difference between somebody who is a jerk and somebody who is simply sort of effective and the like. Yeah, but I don't understand the evolutionary biology. The main thing I know about sex differences is that once you look into the research, they tend to be quite exaggerated. So,
interesting.
Anyhow.
Good stuff. Well, okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the workplace. You know, one of the chapters in your book that I think is really probably one of the most important, I would guess, is chapter 4, just avoidance. You know, reducing exposure to these people is huge, right?
So that's one of the most important things you can do is, one of my friends says, don't engage with crazy. And I think that's good advice. And there's different hints in the academic literature, especially about the power of just creating some physical distance between you and people who are nasty. This kind of astounding study that was just published a couple of years ago, they followed about 2,000 people over several years who worked in open offices. And what they found was that people who were within 25 feet of a toxic person, a jerk, or an asshole, whatever you want to call them, would, number one, tend to catch the disease because it's contagious, and two, tend to get fired.
Wow.
So where you sit is really important. And by the way, on the upside, it's great. They published the negative stuff first, and now the positive stuff is coming out. It turns out that if you are within 25 feet of a collaborative superstar, it helps your career. So who you sit next to is very important.
Wow. Yeah. So your peer group is important. I mean, certainly, hopefully, if we had good parents, they told us that as we were growing up. I believe it's actually true. You know, there's an old saying from one of my mentors, Jim Rohn, your income will be the average of the five people you spend most of your time with. So everything's contagious. You know, we can't deny it as humans. Yeah. Look, yawning is contagious, right? Sneezing is contagious. So, yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Tell us more.
So also in terms of distance, one of the sort of tactics that people will use is when they're dealing with somebody who is difficult. Sometimes I call this the rhythm method. And this is the boss who sends you the string of nasty emails, wants to meet you all the time, wants to call you up and yell at you, doing things to slow things down, reduce the frequency of the interaction. So one of the classic things, and one of my friends who, when she was a doctoral student, just a horrible dissertation advisor, she'd answer every 10th email or so, and she'd answer it really neutral, so that she didn't get involved in that rhythm too much or expose herself to it too much.
Yeah.
And then the final thing is, you know, we talk about technology sometimes amplifies these problems, but one of my favorite examples is a CEO I know. So in the book, I talk about board holes and douche boards, which is something people, these CEOs would write me about. So she was CEO of this company, and she had a board member who would always scream at her. The first 20 minutes, there'd be screaming. And what she said, I'd always do phone meetings with him. And for the first 20 minutes, I would turn the volume off on the phone, and I'd put my feet up on my desk and paint my toenails and just turn the volume on every now and then and say, yes, so that's interesting, and then wait for him to calm down. So I thought that was just like this beautiful way of sort of buffering yourself from this obnoxious CEO.
Yeah.
But people use different strategies to essentially reduce their exposure. There are times when you do need to fight. I mean, we should talk about that.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just kind of got to take it and get through it.
Yeah, right. So usually the nature probably of most of us, the knee-jerk reaction is to fight, to go right back at them, right? And to take it, you know, on the offense. And that you're saying, is it makes it worse. And, you know, I'd liken a lot of this stuff that you just said about that boss and just slowing the interactions. I think that also probably applies very much to trolling, trolls on the internet.
Oh, yeah.
If you feed into them, you make it worse, probably. That's what most people say. Is that, do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. The evidence is once you respond, because that's what they want. It's reinforcing for them. I mean, on fighting, I believe you should do it, but I believe you should do it when the odds you're going to win are good. That's my my philosophy. And there's some situations, for some reason, I got both through a friend and email interactions. I had a bunch of interactions with the folks talking about their first year at U.S. military academies. In that situation, you're going to be treated like dirt every day. That's just your life,
right?
A first year plebe. And one of the best tactics, if there's some research that supports this, is when you're encountering a difficult person, you know it's temporary. Oh, it lasts a long time. It's something like the Air Force Academy. You imagine you're looking back from the future and it's over and it wasn't that bad. And this guy, we went back and forth on email, and he said, so what I did when I was at the Air Force Academy, and they'd be hazing me, an inch from my nose, screaming at me, what I'd imagine is it was 2 or 3 years later, and I was flying, I was in my plane, and this was nothing to get through. And he said, that's what happened, it worked. And so sometimes we just get in those situations, you just got to get through it. I mean, we can talk about the fighting. There are times when you should fight back, and in my perspective, is you should fight back when you got a good chance to win.
Okay, good point. So looking at the long term, looking at the future, and I think with so many challenges we face in life, you know, when we look back on these problems that seem huge at the time, you know, this guy really attacked my ego, I'm really mad, whatever, I'm sad. If you just let some time pass, time heals all wounds. And so look to the long term. Great advice. So you talk about fight when you can win. That's a very interesting and rational concept. How do you know when to fight? How do you know when you have a better chance of winning?
There's at least three things I like. The first one is, I hate to use up power, but we know power matters. If you're the boss, there's this guy, Paul Purcell. He's chairman of a company you may have heard of, Baird, a CEO for a long time. They have a no asshole rule. He tells people when he interviews them, if I discover you're an asshole, I'm going to fire you. And he can fire you. He's the CEO, right? They're the chairman now. He can do it. Most of us don't have that challenge. What the research shows is that the more allies you can have when you're fighting back against somebody who's demeaning, that way you're not labeled as crazy, and plus you have kind of a posse to support you. So those are kind of the two main things that I look for. And then always there's documentation. I mean, one of the sort of amazing things. I mean, he's passed away, but I never thought that Roger Ailes would be gone from Fox News. But, you know, Megyn Carlson recorded him doing very bad things. So sometimes that gives you some power, too. But, you know, my perspective is that you should think about who you're fighting and figure out if you can win. And there's another element to this I really like to emphasize, which is that when people are demeaning or put us down, sometimes there's a lot of times when they don't realize they're doing it. And if you're dealing with that kind of person who's a jerk, unlike the person you were talking about, I think, that sometimes if you can just pull them aside and explain to them how they're making you and others feel, sometimes it can be a very effective strategy, especially if there's somebody who's doing it unintentionally.
Just to appeal to their humanity. It just, God, though, it seems like some people just have no humanity.
Oh, no. So that's why I say know your ass. If you've got somebody who's a clueless asshole, that'll work. But if you've got somebody who's their brain lights up every time they see you suffer, then you've kind of got a choice of getting out, and I do believe in quitting in bad situations, or sort of showing them some porcupine power that you're not going to take it. So, so yes, there are certain types of people who, what is it, your pain is their pleasure, and in that case, you got to fight back or get out.
You know, it's interesting too, Robert. One thing I want to kind of point out is the flip side of what you have been describing about, you're talking about the evil boss, right? You know, that has power over you. But interestingly, and I've never had a real job. I've always been an employer, never been an employee. And so, and always an entrepreneur. A lot of times it's really flipped though. It's the employee, honestly, who has, you know, it's counterintuitive, but really has more power over you. And you've got to cater to them, babysit them, be nice to them. They can sabotage your business. They can ruin you sometimes. So it's not always as it seems that the boss, right?
And the other problem, and I bet you've been in the situation as an entrepreneur and the boss, is that people are afraid to give the boss bad news. They hide things from you. So that's the, when you're in a power position, that's the classic thing. One of the CEOs that, I interviewed, I've got to know him fairly well. This is a little bit extreme language. We'll say he uses the word grin effers. And he described he had this guy on his senior team who, whenever he would ask him to do something, the grin effer would say, oh, yes, yes, boss, I'm going to do it right away. I'm on it. It's just such a great idea. And then two things would happen behind his back. One is the grin effer would badmouth him and talk about how stupid his idea was, and then he wouldn't do it at all. And he said it took me like a year and a half to figure out that this guy was just sort of like a two-faced jerk and was badmouthing me behind my back, and then I finally fired him. And so that's one of the classic sort of things that, and he said what happened was that he actually brought in two or three other senior folks to work with this guy, and they basically told him the truth, which is that this guy's out to get you. This guy is not your friend.
And then he
eventually got rid of him.
We employers have a name for that. We call them onboard terrorists. So that's the onboard terrorist right there. It's careful. You got to get rid of them. Okay. Well, kind of sum this up for us if you can. I mean, what is kind of the holistic advice? Anything we didn't talk about, please bring that up. You know, any questions I didn't ask you that you want to point out?
I've got kind of two mottos that I think do sum it up and I think that are important. One is, because there's all these biases that we all have, that we're a good person and it's other people's fault, but the evidence is that we're very slow to see our own weaknesses. So my motto is to be slow to label other people as jerks, because you might be part of the problem or might be thin-skinned, and to be faster to label yourself as a jerk or an asshole. And on average, it will keep you from making snap judgments that will get you in trouble and hurt other people. So that's one. And then the other thing is, and we were talking a little bit before, that I kind of rail against this asshole's finish first notion because I do so much damage. And my other motto is that if you're a winner and an asshole in my book, you're still a loser as a human being because you're doing so much damage to other people. And there's so many people in business who are so successful, are such good human beings. You don't have to be a jerk to get ahead. And I think of you know, Warren Buffett, one of my heroes. Like he's a perfectly civilized human being. He shows that you can be very successful in business. And everybody talks about Steve Jobs, who, by the way, was not as bad, especially in his later years, as most people like or believe. But Tim Cook seems to be, by all accounts, a completely civilized person. And they say, oh, he's not Steve Jobs. He's doing pretty good, actually.
I agree.
For a
For
a nice, modest guy, he's doing all right.
So with your first point, the old saying, the unexamined life is not worth living. So first look in the mirror and try and interpret how you're coming off, right? That's good advice.
Right.
Unexamined life, not worth living. And then secondly, I was going to ask you about Steve Jobs because I remember you wrote about him in your in the first book, the first whole book. What's interesting about Steve Jobs to me is that in so many areas of life, you know, I constantly talk about how you can't hear the dogs that don't bark. And everybody says, well, look at Steve Jobs, look at how brilliant he was and how successful he was and so on and so forth. And, you know, he mellowed in his later years, of course, as most people do, especially when they feel their mortality coming on. But also the question nobody ever asks is how much more successful could Steve Jobs have been if he was a more civilized, reasonable, easy to work with human being? And he, you know, he didn't have temper tantrums, right? That's a good question, isn't it?
So one thing, in the book, actually, I talk about this very early in the book. So I had this conversation with Ed Catmull. This was about 3 years ago. So Ed is head of Pixar. He met Steve at least once a week for 25 years. He knew Steve really well. And his argument was that one point that people don't get about Jobs was that there was a point, as I remember, he got kicked out of Apple, he started Next, a computer company, and he wandered in the wilderness, as Ed put it. And the Steve Jobs that came out on the other side, although not exactly a doormat or a sweetheart, was a much more civilized, team-oriented person and much more grateful to other people. And that was the Steve Jobs who built Apple and also Pixar, too, in his key role. It wasn't the really nasty early one, and I'm not saying that he was all nice and flowers and everything.
Yeah. Right, but he was better.
He was better,
right?
And that was the Steve Jobs that became the Steve Jobs who was so admired. And but the other thing about him is he was so talented in so many other ways, it was just crazy. So it's like... Who knows?
Right. Yeah. 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 This is good stuff, Robert. Thank you for coming on the show. Do you want to give out a website or a Twitter account or anything where people can find you? Of course, the books are on all the usual places.
Books on, is on Amazon and everywhere, but my general website is bobsutton.net. I tweet at work_matters. So that's where I work_matters.
Good
so
stuff.
That's my Twitter handle.
Good stuff. Well, Robert Sutton, thank you so much for joining us today. And everybody listening, remember, being a nice, decent, civilized human being is free. It costs nothing. So take advantage of it. It's a great deal. Good stuff. Thanks for joining us. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.